superhero. My heart almost squeezes to a stop. Blue loves superheroes. Blue. I slide an inch closer, so our legs are touching, just barely. I'm not sure if he notices. I don't know why I'm so brave today. I'm 99.9% sure that Cal is blue. But there's that fraction of a percent chance that he's not. For some reason, I can't seem to come out and ask him. So instead I ask, "How's the coffee?" "Pretty good, Simon. Pretty good." I look up and realize that Abby is watching me with great interest. I flash her the stink eye, and she looks away. But she has this tiny, knowing smile that just kills me. Ms. Albright sends a bunch of us to the music room and puts Cal in charge. All things considered, it's a perfect situation. To get there, we have to walk all the way past the math and science classrooms and down the back stairway. Everything is dark and spooky and awesome on a Saturday. The school is totally empty. The music room is tucked into its own alcove at the end of the hall downstairs. I used to do choir, so I've spent some time here. It hasn't changed. I get the impression that it hasn't changed in about 20 years. There are three rows of chairs on built-in platforms that edge around the sides of the classroom in a split hexagon shape. In the center of the room is a big wooden upright piano. There's a laminated sign taped to the front reminding us to have outstanding posture. Cal sits on the edge of the piano bench, stretching his arm back behind his head. So, maybe we could start with consider yourself or pick a pocket or two, he says, shuffling his foot against the leg of the piano bench. He looks so lost. Martin attempts to transfer one of his curlers onto Abby's ponytail, and Abby stabs him in the gut with a wooden drumstick. And a couple of people have taken out the guitars and started plucking out random pop songs. No one is really listening to Cal except me. Well, and Taylor. "Do you want us to clear away these music stands?" I ask. Yeah, that would be awesome," he says. "Thanks, y'all." There's a piece of paper on one of the stands that catches my eye. Neon orange, with the word "set list" written in black Sharpie. Underneath that is a list of songs, classic awesome songs like "Somebody to Love" and "Billie Jean." "What's that?" asks Taylor. I shrug, handing it to her. "I don't think this is supposed to be here," she says, throwing it away. Of course she doesn't. Taylor is the enemy of everything awesome. Cal has Ms. Albright's laptop, which has piano recordings of the accompaniment to all the songs. Everyone's a pretty good sport about running through everything once, and it's not a total disaster. As much as I hate to admit it, Taylor probably has the best voice out of anyone in the school other than Nick, and Abby is such a good dancer that she can seriously carry the whole ensemble. And anything Martin touches is strange and absurd and hilarious, especially when he's wearing a nightie. There's still almost an hour before we're supposed to reconvene in the auditorium, and we're probably supposed to run through everything again. But I mean, really. It's Saturday. We're in an empty, dark school, and we're a bunch of theater kids wearing pajamas and jacked up on donuts. We end up singing Disney songs in the stairwell. Abby weirdly knows every word to every song in Pocahontas, and everyone knows The Lion King and Aladdin and Beauty and the Beast. Taylor can improvise harmonies, and I guess we're all warmed up from singing the Oliver songs, because it just sounds really amazing. And the acoustics in the stairwell are freaking awesome. And then we go back upstairs, and Mila Odom and Eve Miller pull a bunch of rolling chairs out of the computer lab. It's pretty convenient that Creekwood has such long, straight hallways. Perfect happiness is gripping the bottom of a rolling chair with both hands, while Cal Price pushes me down the hall in a full-on run. We race against two of the sophomore girls from the ensemble. Cal is kind of a slow-moving person, so they totally dominate, but I don't even care. His hands grip my shoulders, and we're both laughing, and the row of lockers are a toothpaste blue blur. I let down my legs, and we skid to a stop. And I guess I have to get up. I raise my hand to give Cal a high five, but instead, he threads his fingers through mine for just a second. Then he looks down and smiles, and his eyes are hidden by his bangs. We untangle our hands, and my heart is thudding. I have to look away from him. Then Taylor, of all people, mounts one of the chairs. Her blonde hair flies backward as Abby pushes her, and they're the indisputable champions. Abby and her leg muscles, I guess. I had no idea she was so freaking fast. Abby collapses into me, laughing and panting, and we slide to the floor against the lockers. She leans her head on my shoulder, and I slide my arm around her back. Leah can get weird about touching, and it's this unspoken thing that I don't really touch Nick. But Abby's a huggy person, and I sort of am too, so that's been nice. And everything has just felt really natural and comfortable between us since that night in the car after the Waffle House. It's pretty cozy sitting next to Abby, and smelling her magical French toast scent, while we watch the freshmen take turns racing in the chairs. Abby and I sit like that for so long my arms start to prickle. But it isn't until we're finally about to head back to the auditorium that I realize two people have been watching us. The first is Cal. The second is Martin. And he looks pretty goddamn furious. Spirit, we need to talk. Martin pulls me into a stairwell. Now? Because Ms. Albright wants us to- Yeah, Ms. Albright can fucking wait a second. Okay, what's up? I lean against the railing and look up at him. The stairwell is dark, but my eyes are pretty well adjusted, and I can see the tension in Martin's jaw. He stops and waits until the others are too far down the hall to overhear. So I guess you think this is all hilarious, he says under his breath. What? He doesn't elaborate. I have no freaking clue what you're talking about, I say finally. Right, of course not. Martin crosses his arms in front of his chest and tugs on his elbow, and he just radiates the stink eye. Marty, seriously, I don't know why you're upset. If you want to fill me in, great. Otherwise, I don't know what to tell you. He exhales loudly and leans into the railing. You're trying to humiliate me. And believe me, I get it. I get that you weren't 100% on board with our arrangement.
Our arrangement? You mean you blackmailing me? Yeah, I'm not on board with being blackmailed, if that's what you're wondering.
You think I'm fucking blackmailing you?
What the hell else would you call it? I say. But it's funny. I'm not really pissed off at him. A little bewildered at the moment, but not angry.
Look, it's over. The Abby thing is done, okay? So you can forget about the whole goddamn thing.
I pause. Did something happen with Abby?
Yes, something fucking happened with Abby. She fucking rejected me.
What? When?
Martin stands abruptly, his face flushed.
Roughly 5 minutes before she draped herself all over you, he says.
What? Yeah, that's not what-
You know what? Save it, Spear. Actually, you know what you can do? You can tell Ms. Albright I'll see her in fucking January.
You're leaving? I ask. I seriously don't know what the hell is happening.
He flips me the bird as he walks away. He doesn't even turn around to look at me.
Martin, are you- Merry goddamn Christmas, Simon! He says, hope you're happy.
18. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 20th at 1:45 p.m. Subject, oh baby. Jacques, you're not going to believe this. I got home from school yesterday, and both of my parents were there. I know that doesn't sound crazy, but you have to realize that my mom almost never leaves work early, and my dad has literally never driven up here with no advance notice before. Then he was just up here 2 weeks ago. They were sitting on the couch in the living room, and they had been laughing about something, but they stopped abruptly when I walked in. I felt so queasy, Jacques. I was positive my mom had told my dad I was gay, which would just be... I don't know. Anyway, there was this excruciating half hour of small talk, and then my mom finally stood up and said she was going to leave my dad and me alone for a minute. And then she went into her bedroom. The whole thing was just so weird. Anyway, my dad seemed really nervous, and I was really nervous. We were talking, and I forgot what he said, but I realized my mom hadn't told him anything, and suddenly I wanted him to know. I felt like it had to be that very second.
So I was listening to him talk and waiting for an opportunity to tell him, but he just kept talking and talking, and it was strange and tangential and boring. Then all of a sudden, pretty much out of nowhere, he tells me that my stepmother is pregnant. She's due in June. I was really, really not expecting that. I've been an only child my whole life. So yeah, if anyone can find the humor in this, it's you. Please. Or just distract me. You're good at that, too. Love, Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 20th at 6:16 p.m. Subject, regarding, oh baby. Blue. Wow. I'm just, wow. Congratulations? I don't know. I can't tell 100% how you feel about it, but it seems like you're not thrilled. I guess I wouldn't be. Especially if I was used to being an only child. And then there's a dad having sex factor, which is always horrifying. And he bought you a book by freaking Casanova? Ugh. Also, I'm sorry you got all prepared again to come out and didn't get a chance to do it. That really sucks. I'm trying to find the humor here for you. Poop? Poop is funny, right? I guess there will be a lot of it. I don't know why it doesn't seem funny to me right now. Poop! I mean, I'm trying. That's so weird the way your parents told you, like they were both in on it. I guess he wanted to give your mom a heads up first or something, and then he was nervous to tell you. It's like he's our age telling his parents he knocked someone up, which is totally the straight person equivalent of coming out. As a side note, don't you think everyone should have to come out? Why is straight the default? Everyone should have to declare one way or another, and it should be this big, awkward thing, whether you're straight, gay, bi, or whatever. I'm just saying. Anyway, I don't know if any of this is helping. I guess I'm a little off my game. Kind of a weird day for me, too. But just know I'm sorry this is hitting you out of nowhere. And I'm thinking about you. Love, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 21st at 9:37 a.m. Subject, poop. Jacques, first of all, your email helped a lot. I don't know. Something about poop and Casanova and the phrase knocked up in reference to my dad. It's all such a train wreck. I think I do see the humor. I guess it's not necessarily a bad thing to have a little fetus sibling. I'm pretty curious to find out if it's a boy or a girl. Anyway, I feel a lot better now that I've gotten some sleep. And I think just talking it over with you makes everything better. Sorry, you had a weird day too. Want to talk about it? It is definitely annoying that straight, and white for that matter, is the default. And that the only people who have to think about their identity are the ones who don't fit that mold. Straight people really should have to come out, and the more awkward it is, the better. Awkwardness should be a requirement. I guess this is sort of our version of the homosexual agenda. Love, Blue. P.S. By the way, guess what I'm eating at this very moment? From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 21st at 10:11 a.m. Subject, regarding poop. Blue. I hope for your sake that little fetus is a boy, because sisters are a freaking handful. I'm glad you're feeling a little better about things. I don't know how I did it, but I'm glad I was able to help somehow. Nah, don't worry about my weird day. Someone got angry at me, and it's kind of hard to explain, but it's a stupid misunderstanding. Whatever. The homosexual agenda? I don't know. I think it's more like the Homo sapiens agenda. That's really the point, right? Love, Jacques. P.S. You have me curious. A banana? Hot dog? Cucumber? From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 21st at 10:24 a.m. Subject, The Homo Sapiens Agenda. Jacques. I love it. Love, Blue. P.S. Mind out of the gutter, Jacques. P.P.S. More like a giant baguette. P.P.P.S. No, really, it's Oreos. In your honor. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 21st at 10:30 a.m. Subject, regarding the Homo sapiens agenda. Blue. I love that you're having Oreos for breakfast. And I love your giant baguette. So here's the thing. I've been typing this and deleting this and trying to think of a better way to phrase this. I don't know. I'm just going to come out and say it. I want to know who you are. I think we should meet in person. Love, Jacques. 19. It's Christmas Eve day, and something feels a little bit off. Not bad, just off. I don't know how to explain it. We're hitting every one of the spirit traditions. My mom made reindeer turds, aka Oreo truffles. The tree is lit up and fully decorated. We've done the chipmunk song. It's noon, and we're all still in our pajamas, and everyone is sitting in the living room on separate laptops. I guess it's a little awful that we have five computers. Shady Creek is that kind of suburb, but still. We're scavenger hunting on Facebook. "Call it, Dad," says Alice. "Okay," he says. "Someone visiting somewhere tropical." "Got it," says my mom, turning her laptop around to show us someone's pictures. "Done and done, all right?" A breakup. We're all quiet for several minutes, scrolling through our news feeds. Finally, Nora's got one. "Amber Wasserman," she reads. "Thought I knew you. Looks like I was wrong. One day you're going to turn around and realize what you threw away." "I'd call that an implied breakup," I say. "It's legit." "But you could interpret it literally," I say. "Like she's calling him out for throwing away her iPhone." "That's Simon logic," says Alice, "and I won't allow it. Go, Boop. Your turn." My dad invented the concept of Simon logic, and I can't seem to outgrow it. It means wishful thinking supported by flimsy evidence. "Okay," says Nora. "The opposite. A mushy, disgusting couple." An interesting choice coming from Nora, who basically never talks about anything related to dating. "Okay, got one," I say. "Kara Seward. Feeling so grateful to have Jackson Wildstein in my life. Last night was perfect. I love you so much, baby." Winky face. "Gross," says Nora. "Is that your Karis, bub?" "I don't have a Karis," I say. But I know what Alice is asking. I dated Karis for almost 4 months last spring, though none of our nights together were that sort of perfect. But here's the crazy thing. For the first time ever, I almost get it. It's weird, it's gross, and that creepy little winky face pushes into the realm of TMI. But yeah, maybe I'm losing my edge, but all I can think about is how Blue has been signing emails lately using the word love. I guess I can imagine us having perfect nights sometimes. And I'll probably feel like shouting it from the rooftops, too. I refresh my browser. My turn. "Okay, someone Jewish," I say, "posting about Christmas." My Jewish Episcopalian email boyfriend. I wonder what he's doing right now. "Why doesn't Nick ever post anything?" asks Nora. "Because he thinks Facebook is the lowest common denominator of social discourse. Though he does like to talk about social media as a vehicle for constructing and performing identity. Whatever the hell that means." "Got one. Jenna Goldstein. Movie theater listings in one hand, takeout menus in the other. Ready for tomorrow, Merry Christmas to Jew." "Who's Jenna Goldstein?" my mom asks. "Someone from Wesleyan," says Alice. "Okay, something about lawyers. She's distracted, and I realize her phone is buzzing. Sorry, be right back.
Lawyers? What the heck, Alice? Says Nora. That blatantly favors Dad.
I know, I feel bad for him, Alice calls over her shoulder, before disappearing up the stairs.
Hey, she says, answering her phone.
A moment later, we hear her bedroom door shut.
Got one, my dad beams.
He generally sucks at this game, because he has about 12 Facebook friends total.
Bob Lipinski. Happy holidays to you and yours, from Lipinski and Willis, PC.
Good one, Dad, says Nora. She looks at me. Who's she talking to?
Hell if I know, I say.
Alice is on the phone for 2 hours. It's unprecedented. The scavenger hunt fizzles. Nora curls up with her laptop on the couch, and our parents disappear to their room. And I don't even want to think about what they're up to in there. Not after what Blue's dad and stepmom went and did. Bieber whines in the entryway. My phone buzzes with a text from Leah. We're outside your door. Leah's weird about knocking. I think she gets shy around parents. I walk over to let her in, and find Bieber on his hind legs, basically trying to make out with her through the window.
Down, I say. Come on, Beeb.
I grab him by the collar and swing the door open. It's cold but sunny out, and Leah wears a black woolen hat with cat ears. Nick stands sort of awkwardly behind her.
Hi,
I say, pulling Bieber to the side so they can step past him.
We were actually thinking about taking a walk, says Leah.
I look at her. Something in her tone is a little strange.
Okay, I say. Let me get dressed.
I'm still wearing my golden retriever pajama pants. 5 minutes later, I'm in jeans and a hoodie. I throw a leash on Bieber, and we're out the door.
So you guys just wanted to take a walk, or what?
I ask finally. They look at each other.
Yeah,
says Nick. I raise my eyebrows at him, waiting to see if he'll say more, but he looks away.
How are things going, Simon?
Leah asks in this strange, gentle voice. I stop short. We're barely out of my driveway.
What's going on?
Nothing. She fiddles with the pom-poms that string down from her hat. Nick stares at the road.
Just seeing if you wanted to talk.
About what? I ask. Bieber crosses over to Leah and sits on his haunches, staring up at her with pleading eyes.
Why are you looking at me like that, sweet one?
She asks, ruffling his ears.
I don't have any cookies.
What do you want to talk about? I ask again. We're not walking. We stand by the curb, and I shift my weight from one foot to the other. Leah and Nick exchange another look, and it hits me.
Oh my gosh. You guys hooked up.
What? Leah says, turning bright red.
No.
I look from Leah to Nick and back to Leah.
You didn't?
Simon, no, just stop. Leah isn't looking at Nick. In fact, she's bent all the way over with her face pressed against Bieber's snout.
Okay, then what are we talking about here? I ask. What's going on?
Says Nick. Leah stands. Okay, yeah, I'm gonna go. Merry Christmas, guys. Happy Hanukkah. Whatever. She gives me this curt little nod. Then she bends down again and lets my dog kiss her on the lips. And then she's gone. Nick and I stand there in silence. He touches his thumb briefly to the tip of each finger.
Hanukkah is over, he says finally.
What's going on, Nick?
Look, don't worry about it.
He sighs, staring up the street at Leah's retreating form.
She's parked at my house. I guess I have to give her a minute so it's not like I'm following her.
You can come in, I say. My parents won't care. Alice is home.
Yeah, he says, glancing back at my house. I don't know. I'm just going to...
He turns to me, and there's this look on his face. I've known Nick since we were 4 years old. I've never seen this expression before.
Look.
He puts his hand on my arm. I look down at his hand. I can't help it. Nick never touches me.
Have a good Christmas, Simon. Really.
And then he takes back his hand and waves, and trudges up the road after Leah. Spear family tradition dictates that Christmas Eve dinner is French toast, per my grandma's technique. Thick slices of challah aged one day for maximum egg absorption, cooked in tons of butter in pans partially covered by pot lids. When my grandma makes them, she constantly moves the lids around and flips the bread over and fusses with all of it. She's kind of a hardcore grandma. It never comes out quite as custardy when my dad makes it, but it's pretty freaking good anyway. We eat it at the actual dining table on our parents' wedding china, and my mom brings out the manger scene centerpiece that rotates like a fan when you light a candle beneath it. It's really hypnotic. Alice dims the lights, and my mom puts out cloth napkins, and everything feels really fancy. But it's weird. It doesn't really feel like Christmas Eve. There's this spark missing, and I don't know what it is. I felt like this all week, and I don't understand it. I don't know why everything feels so different this year. Maybe it's because Alice has been gone. Or maybe it's because I'm spending every minute pining for some boy who doesn't want to meet me in person. Or who's not ready to meet me in person. But he's also a boy who signs his emails with love. I don't know. I don't know. In this moment, all I want is for things to feel like Christmas again. I want it to feel how it used to feel. After dinner, my parents put on Love Actually and settle in on the love seat with Bieber wedged between them. Alice disappears again to talk on the phone. Nora and I sit for a while on our opposite ends of the couch, and I stare into the lights of the tree. If I squint my eyes, everything looks sort of bright and hazy, and I can almost catch the feeling I remember. But it's pointless. So I go into my own room and fling myself back on the bed and listen to my music on shuffle. 3 songs later, there's a knock on my door. Simon? It's Nora.
What?
Ugh. I'm coming in. I prop myself halfway up against the pillows and give her a mild stink eye. But she walks in anyway and pushes my backpack off my desk chair. And then she sits with her legs tucked up and her arms around her knees.
Hey,
she says.
What do you want?
I say. She looks at me through her glasses. She's already taken her contact lenses out. Her hair is pulled back messily, and she's changed into a Wesleyan t-shirt. And it's really remarkable how she's starting to look like Alice.
I need to show you something, she says.
She swivels the chair back toward my desk and starts opening my laptop.
Are you kidding me?
I jump up. Seriously. She seriously thinks I'm about to give her open access to my laptop.
Fine, whatever, you do it.
She unplugs it and rolls the chair closer to the bed, handing the laptop over to me.
So what am I looking at?
She sucks her lips in and looks at me again.
Pull up the Tumblr.
Like, Creek Secrets? She nods. I have it bookmarked.
It's loading, I say.
Okay, I've got it. What's up?
Can I sit with you?
She asks. I look up at her.
On the bed?
Yeah.
Okay.
She climbs up next to me and looks at the screen.
Scroll down.
I scroll, and then I stop. Nora turns to face me.
Oh my fucking god.
You okay? She asks softly.
I'm sorry, Sai. I just thought you'd want to know about it. I'm assuming you didn't write it.
I shake my head slowly.
No, I didn't, I say.
December 24th, 10:15 a.m. Simon Spear's open invitation to all dudes. Dear all dudes of Creekwood, with this missive, I hereby declare that I am supremely gay and open for business. Interested parties may contact me directly to discuss arrangements for anal butt sex or blue jobs. But don't give me blue balls. Ladies need not apply. That is all.
I already reported it, said Nora.
They'll take it down. People have already seen it, though.
I don't know.
She's quiet for a moment.
Who would post something like that?
Someone who doesn't know that anal butt sex is redundant.
That's so effed up,
she says.
I mean, I know who posted it. And I guess I should be grateful he didn't post one of his freaking screenshots.
But honest to God, that sly fucking reference to Blue makes him the biggest, most cavernous, gaping asshole who ever lived.
God, what if Blue sees it?
I slam the laptop closed and shove it onto the chair. Then I lean my head back, and Nora scoots back against the headboard. The minutes tick past.
I mean, it's true, I say finally.
I don't look at her. We both stare at the ceiling.
I am gay.
I figured, she says. Now I look at her.
Really?
From your reaction, I don't know.
She blinks.
So what are you going to do about it?
Wait for them to take it down?
What can I do?
But are you going to tell people?
I think Nick and Leah already read it, I say slowly.
Nora shrugs.
You could deny it.
Okay, I'm not going to deny it.
I'm not ashamed of it.
All right, well, I didn't know.
You haven't said anything up until now.
Oh my God, seriously.
I sit up.
Yeah, you don't have a fucking clue what you're talking about.
I'm sorry.
Gee, Simon, I'm just trying to...
She looks at me.
I mean, it's obviously not something to be ashamed of. You know that, right? And I think most people are going to be cool about it.
I don't know what people think about it.
She pauses.
Are you going to tell Mom and Dad? And Alice?
I don't know. I sigh. I don't know.
Your phone keeps buzzing, Nora says. She hands it to me. I've got 5 texts from Abby.
Simon, are you okay?
Call me when you can, okay?
Okay, I don't know how to say this, but you should check the Tumblr. I love you.
Please know I didn't tell anyone. I would never tell anyone.
I love you, okay?
Call me.
And then it's Christmas. I used to wake up at 4 every year in a total frenzy of greed. It didn't matter how thorough I had been about poking for clues. And make no mistake, I was thorough. But Santa was a ninja. He always managed to surprise me. So it looks like I got one hell of a Christmas surprise this year.
And good fucking tidings to you too, Martin.
At 7:30, I walk downstairs, and everything inside me twists and clenches. The lights are still off, but the morning sun is bright through the living room windows, and the tree is fully lit. 5 overstuffed stockings lean up against the couch cushions, too heavy for the mantle. The only one awake is Bieber. I bring him out for a quick pee and give him his breakfast, and then we lie together on the couch and wait. I know Blue is at church right now with his mom and uncle and cousins, and they all went last night, too. He's basically putting in more church time over the past 2 days than I have in my entire life. It's funny. I didn't think this was going to be a big deal. But I think I'd actually rather be at church than here, doing what I'm about to do. By 9, everyone's awake and the coffee's on, and we're having cookies for breakfast. Alice and Nora are reading stuff on their phones. I pour myself a mug of coffee and add an avalanche of sugar. My mom watches me stir.
I didn't know you drink coffee.
Okay, this. She does this every freaking time. Both of them. They put me in a box, and every time I try to nudge the lid open, they slam it back down. It's like nothing about me is allowed to change.
Well, I do.
Okay, she says, putting her hands up like, whoa there, Buck.
That's fine, Si. It's just different. I'm just trying to keep up with you.
If she thinks me drinking coffee is big news, it's going to be quite a fucking morning. We turn to the pile of presents. Blue told me that in his family, presents are opened one at a time, and all the cousins and everyone else just sit and watch each other do it. And then after a few rounds of that, they stop for a while and have lunch or something.
It's just so civilized. It takes them all afternoon to clear out the Christmas tree. Not so with the spears. Alice works her way underneath the tree in crouch position and starts passing bags and boxes down the line, and everyone talks at once. A Kindle case? I don't have a... Open the other one, honey. Hey, Aurora coffee. No, put it on the other way, Boop. Everyone wears these at Wesleyan. In 20 minutes, it's like a freaking paper source exploded all over the living room. I'm on the floor, leaning into the front of the couch, winding the cords of my earbuds around my fingers. Bieber tucks a bow between his paws, and he nips and tugs on it. And everyone's just kind of draped over various pieces of furniture. It's clearly my moment. Though, if this moment really belonged to me, it wouldn't be happening. Not now, I mean. Not yet. Hey, I want to talk to you guys about something. I try to sound casual, but my voice is froggy. Nora looks at me and gives me a tiny, quick smile, and my stomach sort of flips. What's up? Says my mom, sitting up straight. I don't know how people do this. How Blue did this. Two words. Two freaking words. And I'm not the same Simon anymore. My hand is over my mouth, and I stare straight ahead. I don't know why I thought this would be easy. I know what this is, says my dad. Let me guess. You're gay. You got someone pregnant. You're pregnant. Dad, stop it, says Alice. I close my eyes. I'm pregnant, I say. I thought so, kid, says my dad. You're glowing. I look him in the eye. Really, though, I'm gay. Two words. Everyone is quiet for a moment. And then my mom says, Honey, that's... God, that's... Thank you for telling us. And then Alice says, Wow, Bob, good for you. And my dad says, Gay, huh? And my mom says, So talk me through this. It's one of her favorite psychologist lines. I look at her and shrug. We're proud of you, she adds. And then my dad grins and says, So, which one of them did it? Did what? Turned you off women. Was it the one with the eyebrows, the eye makeup, or the overbite? Dad, that's so offensive, says Alice. What? I'm just lightening the mood. Simon knows we love him. Your heterosexist comments aren't lightening the mood. I mean, I guess it's about what I expected. My mom's asking me about my feelings, Dad's turning it into a joke, Alice is getting political, and Nora is keeping her mouth shut. You could say there's a kind of comfort in predictability, and my family is pretty goddamn predictable. But I'm so exhausted and unhappy right now. I thought it would feel like a weight had been lifted. But it's just like everything else this week. Strange and off-kilter and surreal. So that's pretty big news, Bob, Alice says, following me into my room. She shuts the door behind her and settles in cross-legged on the end of my bed. Ugh, I say. I collapse face down into the pillows. Hey. She leans her body sideways until it's level with mine. Everything's cool. There's nothing to mope about. I ignore her. I'm not leaving, Bob, because you're going to wallow. You're going to put on that playlist. What's it called? The Great Depression, I mutter. It's like all Elliot Smith and Nick Drake and the Smiths. I already have it queued up. Right, she says. The Great Depression. That romp. No way. Why are you here? Because I'm your big sister and you need me. I need to be left alone. No way. Talk to me, Bob, she says. She slides toward me, squeezing in between my body and the wall. This is exciting. We can talk about guys. Okay, I say, pushing up off the bed and maneuvering into a sitting position. Then tell me about your boyfriend. Whoa there, she says. What? I look at her. The phone calls, disappearing into your room for hours. Come on. I thought we were discussing your love life. She blushes. So I get to make a scene and come out and have everyone awkwardly debate the whole thing right in front of me on freaking Christmas, I say. And you won't even tell me you have a boyfriend? She's silent for a moment, and I know I have her. She sighs. How do you know I don't have a girlfriend? Is it a girlfriend? No, she says finally, leaning back against the wall. Boyfriend. What's his name? Theo. Is he on Facebook? Yes. I pull up the app on my phone and start scrolling through her friends list. Oh, God, just stop, she says. Simon, seriously, stop. Why? I ask. Because this is exactly why I didn't want to tell you guys. I knew you were going to do this. Do what? Ask a lot of questions, stalk him online, call him out for not liking pie or having facial hair or something. He has facial hair? Simon. Sorry, I say, leaving the phone on my nightstand. I do get it. Actually, I really get it. We're quiet for a moment. I am going to tell them, she says finally. Whatever you want to do. No, you're right. I'm not trying to be... I don't know. She sighs again. I mean, if you have the guts to tell them you're gay, I should... You should have the guts to come out as straight. She cracks a smile. Something like that. You're funny, Bob. I try.
20. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 25th at 5:12 p.m. Subject, O Holy Nightmare. Blue. I officially had the most epically weird and awful Christmas ever, and most of it I can't even tell you about, which really sucks. So yeah, basically, due to certain mysterious circumstances, I'm now out to my whole family and will soon be out to the whole freaking universe. And I guess that's all I can say about it. So it's your turn to distract me, okay? Give me updates about little fetus or the horrifying sexcapades of your parents, or talk about how you think I'm cute. And talk about how you ate too much turkey and now you feel nauseated. Did you know you're the only person I've ever met who uses the word nauseated instead of nauseous? I finally Googled it, and of course you're right. Of course. Anyway, I know you're off to Savannah tomorrow, but I hope to God your dad has internet, because I don't think my heart can handle waiting a full week for an email from you. You should give me your number so I can text you. I promise I'm still relatively grammatical over text. Well, Merry Christmas, Blue. I mean it. And I hope everyone leaves you alone tonight, because that sounds like way too much family time. Maybe next year we can sneak away and spend Christmas together somewhere far away, where our families can't find us. Love, Jacques. From bluegreen118@gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, December 25th at 8:41 p.m. Subject, regarding O Holy Nightmare. Oh, Jacques, I'm so sorry. I can't even begin to imagine what mysterious circumstances led to your being outed to the universe, but it doesn't sound pleasant. And I know it's not what you wanted. I wish I could fix it somehow. No updates on Little Fetus, but suffice it to say that I'm more than a little nauseated now that I've had the pleasure of reading the word sexcapades in reference to my parents. And I do think you're cute. You're absurdly cute. I think I spend a little too much time thinking how adorable you are in emails and trying to translate that into a viable mental image for daydreams and the like. But the texting thing... Oh, I don't know. Really, though, you don't have to worry about me going out of town. Internet in Savannah is abundant. You won't even know I'm gone. Love, Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, December 26th at 1:12 p.m. Subject, daydreams and the like.
specifically, and the like. Please elaborate. Love, Jacques. P.S. Seriously? And the like? From bluegreen118 at gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote at gmail.com. Date, December 26th at 10:42 p.m. Subject, regarding daydreams and the like. And I think I'll shut up now. Love, Blue. 21. It's the Saturday after Christmas, and Waffle House is packed with old people and kids, and random guys sitting at the counter reading actual printed newspapers. People really like to come here for breakfast. I mean, I guess it's technically a breakfast restaurant. Our parents are sleeping in, so it's just my sisters and me, and we're wedged against the wall waiting for a table. We've been waiting here for 20 minutes, and we're all really just reading our phones. But then Alice says, "Oh, hey." She's looking at this guy sitting in a booth across the room. He looks up and smiles and waves at her. He looks strangely familiar, lanky with curly brown hair. "Is that..." "Simon, no. It's Carter Addison. He graduated a year ahead of me. He's the nicest guy. Actually, Bob, maybe you should talk to him because..." "Yeah, I'm leaving," I say, because I've just figured out why Carter Addison looks familiar. "What? Why?" "Because I am." I put my hand out so she can give me the car keys, and then I walk out the door. I'm sitting in the driver's seat with my iPod plugged in and the heat blasting, trying to pick between Tegan and Sarah and the Fleet Foxes. And then the passenger door opens, and Nora slides in. "So what's up with you?" she asks. "Nothing." "Do you know that guy?" "What guy?" I ask. "The one Alice is talking to." "No." Nora looks at me. "Then why do you run away as soon as you saw him?" I lean back against the headrest and shut my eyes. "I know his brother." "Who's his brother?" "You know that Creek Secrets post?" I ask. Nora's eyes get huge. "The one about..." "Yeah." "Why the heck would he write that?" I shrug. "Because he likes Abby. He's a fucking idiot. And he thinks she likes me. I don't even know. It's kind of a long story." "What an asshole," she says. "Yeah," I say, looking at her. Nora never cusses. I'm startled by a loud tap, and I turn around to find Alice's pissed-off face pressed against my window. "Out," she says. "I'm driving." I move to the back seat. Whatever. "So what the hell was that about?" she asks, eyes flashing in the rearview mirror as she backs out of the parking spot. "I don't want to talk about it." "Okay, well, it was a little weird trying to explain to Carter why my brother and sister hauled ass out of the restaurant as soon as they saw him." She pulls onto Roswell Road. "His brother was there, bub. He's in your grade. Marty. Seems like a nice kid." I don't say anything. "And I really wanted waffles today," she says grumpily. "Let it go, Allie," Nora says. It hangs in the air. Another thing Nora never does is stand up to Alice. We drive in silence the rest of the way home. "Simon, the basement fridge. Not later, not in a minute, now," my mom says. "Or the party is off." "Mom, just stop, I'm doing it." "I mean, seriously, I have no freaking idea where she got the idea that this is a party. You do realize that Nick, Leah, and Abby have all been here roughly 5 zillion times." "That's fine," she says. "But this time you're going to make the basement presentable, or else you'll be ringing in the new year on the couch. Smack dab between your dad and me." "Or we'll go to Nick's," I mutter. My mom is halfway up the stairs, but she turns around to catch my eye. "No, you won't. And speaking of Nick, your father and I discussed this, and we want to sit down with you and brainstorm about how we're going to handle him spending the night. I'm not worried about tonight, since the girls will be there, but thinking ahead..." "Oh my God, Mom, stop. I'm not talking about this right now." Jesus Christ.
as if Nick and I can't be in a room together without it turning into frenzied wild sex. Everyone gets here around 6, and we end up packed onto the scraggly basement couch eating pizza and watching reruns of The Soup. Our basement is kind of a time capsule, with shaggy, camel-colored carpet and shelves of Barbies and Power Rangers and Pokemon. And there's a bathroom and a little laundry room with a fridge. It's really very cozy and awesome down here. Leah sits on one end of the couch, and then me, and then Abby. And Nick is on the other end, plucking the strings of Nora's old guitar. Bieber whimpers from the top of the stairs, and there are footsteps above us, and Abby's telling a story about Taylor. Apparently Taylor said something annoying. I'm trying to laugh in the right places. I think I'm a little overstimulated. Leah is intently focused on the television. When we finish eating, I run up to open the door for Bieber, who almost trips down the stairs and then flings himself into the room like a cannonball. Nick mutes the TV and plays a slow, acoustic version of Brown Eyed Girl. The footsteps above us stop, and I can hear someone say, "Whoa, that's beautiful," one of Nora's friends. Nick's singing voice has this supernatural effect on freshman girls. Nick sits very, very close to Abby on the couch, and I honestly think I can feel the waves of panic radiating off of Leah. She and I are on the floor now, rubbing Bieber's belly. She hasn't said a word. "Look at this dog," I say. "No shame. He's like, grope me." I'm feeling this weird pressure to be extra jolly and talkative. Leah trails her fingers through the curls on Bieber's belly and doesn't respond. "He has Coke bottle mouth," I point out. She looks at me. "I don't think that's a thing." "No?" I say. Sometimes I forget what's a Spear family invention and what's real. And then, out of nowhere, and without any change in intonation, she says, "So they took that post down." "I know," I say, and there's a nervous flutter in my gut. I haven't talked about the Tumblr post yet with Nick or Leah, though I know they've seen it. "We don't have to talk about it, though," says Leah. "It's fine." I glance up at the couch. Abby is leaning back against the cushions with her eyes closed and a smile on her lips. Her head is tilted toward Nick. "Do you know who wrote it?" Leah says. "Yes." She looks at me expectantly. "It doesn't matter," I say. We're both quiet for a moment. Nick stops playing, but he hums and taps out a rhythm on the body of the guitar. Leah twists her hair up for a minute and then lets it fall back down, where it hangs past her boobs. I look at her without meeting her eye. "I know what you're not asking me," I say finally. She shrugs, smiling slightly. "I am gay. That part's true." "Okay," she says. I realize that Nick has stopped humming. "But I'm not turning this into a big thing tonight, okay? I don't know. Do you guys want ice cream?" I pull myself up. "Did you just tell us you're gay?" asks Nick. "Yes." "Okay," he says. Abby swats him. "What? That's all you're going to say? Okay?" "He said not to make a big deal out of it," Nick says. "What am I supposed to say?" "Say something supportive. I don't know. Or awkwardly hold his hand like I did. Anything." Nick and I look at each other. "I'm not holding your hand," I tell him, smiling a little. "All right," he nods. "But know that I would." "Aw, that's better," says Abby. Leah has been quiet, but she turns to Abby suddenly. "Simon already told you?"
He, yes,
says Abby, cutting her eyes to me quickly.
"Oh,"
says Leah. And there's a silence.
"Well, I'm getting ice cream," I say, moving toward the stairs, and Bieber collides with my legs in his eagerness to follow.
Hours later, the ice cream's been eaten, and the peaches dropped, and my neighbors have finally used up their fireworks. I stare at the ceiling. We have a popcorn ceiling in our basement, and in the darkness its texture makes shadowy pictures and faces. Everyone brought sleeping bags, but instead of using them, we set up a nest of blankets and sheets and pillows on top of the carpet. Abby next to me is asleep, and I can hear Nick snoring a few feet away. Leah's eyes are closed, but she's breathing like she's awake. I guess it would be wrong of me to nudge her to find out. But then all of a sudden, she rolls onto her side and sighs, and her eyes snap open. "Hey," I whisper, rolling my body toward her. "Hey, are you mad?"
"About what?"
she asks. "About me telling Abby first." She's quiet for several seconds, and then,
"I don't have a right to be mad."
"What are you talking about?"
"This is your thing, Simon."
"But you're entitled to your emotions," I say. I mean, if there's one thing I've learned from having a psychologist for a mother.
"This isn't about me, though."
She rolls onto her back, folding one arm behind her head.
I don't know what to say to that.
We're both quiet for a minute. "Don't be mad," I say finally.
"Did you think I would have some kind of shitty reaction, or that I wouldn't be okay with it?"
"Of course not. God, Leah, no. Not at all. You're like the most... I mean, you're the one who introduced me to Harry and Draco. Yeah, that wasn't even a concern."
"Okay, well..."
Her other hand rests on her stomach over the blankets, and I watch it rise and fall with each breath.
"So who else did you tell?"
"My family," I say. I mean, Nora saw the tumbler, so then I had to.
"Right, but I mean, who else other than Abby?"
"No one," I say. But then I close my eyes and think about Blue.
"Then how did it end up on the tumbler?"
she asks. "Oh, right." I grimace. "Long story," I say, opening my eyes again. She angles her head toward me but doesn't reply. I can feel her watching me. "I think I'm about to fall asleep," I say. But I'm not. And I don't. Not for hours and hours. 22. From bluegreen118 at gmail.com to hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com. Date, January 1st at 1:19 p.m. Subject, regarding Auld Lang Syne. Jacques. Poor zombie. Hope you're already sleeping again as I type this. The good news is that there are still 4 days left of vacation, which should clearly be devoted exclusively to sleeping and writing to me. I missed you last night. The party thing was fine. It was at my stepmother's grandmother's house, and she's about 90 years old, so we were back home in front of the TV by 9. Oh, and Mr. Sexual Awakening was there. His wife is extremely pregnant. She and my stepmom were comparing ultrasound photos of their fetuses at dinner. Our little fetus looks like your basic cute little alien with a big head and tiny limbs. You can actually see his or her nose, so that was kind of cool. But unfortunately, Mr. Sexual Awakening's wife had a 3D ultrasound picture. All I can say, Jacques, is that there are some things you can't unsee. Any plans until school starts again? Love, Blue. From hourtohour.notetonote@gmail.com to bluegreen118@gmail.com. Date, January 1st at 5:31 p.m. Subject, regarding Auld Lang Syne. Zombie is right. I'm a freaking mess. We just got back from Target, and I actually fell asleep in the car on the way home. Which, thankfully, my mom was the one driving. But you have to understand that Target is like 5 minutes away from my house. How weird is that? So now I feel kind of strange and groggy and disoriented, and I think my parents are going to want to do dinner tonight as a family. Ugh. Sorry to hear about the trauma of the 3D ultrasound, from which you so kindly tried to spare me the details. Unfortunately, I'm a freaking idiot with very little self-control when it comes to Google Images, so now it's forever seared into my memory as well. Oh, the miracle of life. You may also want to look up reborn dolls. Seriously, go do it. Nothing much going on here this weekend, other than the fact that every freaking thing in the universe reminds me of you. Target is full of you. Did you know they make these big, massive Sharpies called Super Sharpies?